Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping into the Switch Pivot Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, and I am your host as well as chief encourager and author. Today, we're talking about Queen Boss on Centric TV. We're about 3 weeks in so far, and if you've missed our previous recaps, girl, go and check them out. Go back, look at the list. Find one, recap two, and check them out. However, I will say that this is not the type of show where you have to feel like if you missed episode one or episode two, you couldn't just drop in anywhere in between the six episodes and feel like you're up to date. It's not the type of show where there's an ongoing storyline where you'll feel left out. So I encourage you to listen to the past recaps, to also watch the past episodes, the past first two episodes or first three now. But if you are behind, you can still follow along with us and keep this train moving. So let's go ahead and get started with our third Queen Boss recap. I hope you're ready because I'm switching it up a bit this week. So let's get into it. So the show overview is, obviously, I said the show airs on Centric TV. It airs on Saturday night. You have to check your local listings to see exactly what time it airs. But it's 18 entrepreneurs competing weekly. Three compete each week. And in the end, one will walk away with $25,000 in seed money for their business. This week's judges were Vanessa Simmons. Vanessa Simmons is a TV personality as well as a businesswoman, and most recently she hosted and judged for Project Runway. Lauren Lake is also another judge, and I think that Lauren and Vanessa, although I commented last week and said, you know, I'm trying to figure out who are the staple judges and if there are any staple judges, I think it's pretty clear that 3 weeks in, we've seen Lauren and we've seen Vanessa repeatedly, and we've seen that third spot swap out. So I think that Vanessa and Lauren will be the staple judges. Now, Lauren is a lawyer, an entertainment television personality, an author, an interior designer, a real estate developer, a background singer, and a legal relationships life consultant as well. So she is a woman of many talents. And this week they were joined by Mickey Taylor as the guest judge. Mickey is an author, she's a speaker, and she is also a former beauty director and cover editor of Essence magazine. And that may be where a lot of us know Mickey from. I definitely recall her from her Essence days. And let me just say, I loved the energy that she brought to this episode. I loved her commentary. She was nice, but she was also straightforward with her questioning. And you could tell that she was rooting for these women. She wasn't, the questions that she was asking, it wasn't coming from a nasty place. She wasn't in a space where she was trying to tear people down. She was definitely trying to get to the bottom of things and help these women and help herself and help the show and help us watching understand where these women were coming from and why they felt like they needed to win this $25,000. Now, in addition to being your chief encourager at Life According to Her, I'm also a writer and traditionally published author, for those who did not know. So I operate in the entrepreneurial as well as freelance world, which is one of the reasons why I really enjoy watching Queen Boss. I tune in because I want to see who's pitching what their pitches look like, what the judges are saying, what types of questions the judges are asking, because I feel like it's really, really interesting, especially if you're operating in this world, in this space of freelance and entrepreneurship, and if you're a person who has bigger dreams beyond your 9-to-5 and this is something that you're thinking of doing, or if you have a side hustle. It's always good to know what's happening out there in your industry or in a world that's relative to what you have going on or what you're trying to do. So that is why I tune in. So this week, I'm going to switch it up because I'm just going to tell you right off top who I favored and why. In previous weeks, I've gone through who the contestants were and given a little bit of my commentary, but I'm going to just let you know straight up who I favored this week. And the person that I favored this week was the last woman to pitch, and her name was Barika Edwards. Barika Edwards created this online-based matching system. So she calls herself a social entrepreneur, and it is called Oya. Now, although I loved Barika, I loved her idea, I loved her her product. I definitely wanted to switch the name. The judges didn't ask her where the name came from and what the origin of the name was. And maybe if they did, I missed it. Forgive me if I did. But maybe if there was some kind of connection to the name, I would understand a bit better. But just for commercial purposes, I definitely feel like the name could be a bit catchier. Like, the first thing that I thought based off of the business, and I'll get into that in a second, is Bet on a Vet. And the reason I say that is because her business is geared toward military veterans, and it's essentially a job matching type of service. So she enlists different companies, and they then have the opportunity to select from candidates that are veterans. Now, from my understanding, there's a membership fee for the companies to participate and to have the access to select from these veterans. They have to pay $200 a quarter. Currently, she said that she has about 80 veterans participating, and they're onboarding 2 to 4 new people each week. And she says that she will use the $25,000 if she were awarded the money. She would use it to do sales engagement and bolster her sales and the sell-in for the companies, I'm guessing, to get more companies on board to know about it and to get more veterans to know about the service. So she gave an example of a Navy veteran, Greg, that they used to match through the system, and they matched him with a job that was ideal for him, and it worked out. He was a success story. Now, the judges, one of the things that they were wondering about is this a for-profit company or is this a non-profit company? Now, Barika, her whole pitch was about it being a for-profit company. And when they asked, she said it's a for-profit company. But the question that the judges, you know, the question that they were asking themselves is, would this be better suited and better positioned as a nonprofit company? And I agree. That was one of the first things that I thought is, you know, because of the angle with the military and the veterans, like, to me, it was like, this is a no-brainer nonprofit type of situation. But we all know that you can still make profit and pay yourself a salary and things in the nonprofit space. And as Barika got to talking about more about the why, and they really had to push her. When they asked initially, do you want to tell us your why? They felt like that piece was missing. Like, what makes you connected to these veterans and wanting to help them in terms of after they are now out in the world and they're trying to, you know, find jobs? What makes you want to help them? What's the connection? She was hesitant. She didn't want to tell at first. She was just like, no. She actually straight up said, no, I decline. I don't want to get into the personal aspect of it, the personal drive behind it. So after a little bit of poking and prodding, she eventually started to open up a bit more. And she said that, you know, the military was close to her family. There's people in her family. One of her cousins actually got killed in service. And so these are the types of things where she saw a problem and she wanted to be a part of the solution. Instead of just talking about it and acknowledging that there was a problem and an issue, she wanted to be a part of it. So I thought that that was admirable. And she said she's always thought of herself as a problem solver and someone who wants to make a difference in the community. I really liked her idea. I thought that it had a lot of potential. I thought it had a lot of growth potential, and that it could, it's something that you could see lasting and being around 10 years from now. Whether Barika was involved with it or not, it's something that you could see growing, and it could truly be like her legacy. So that's what really made me gravitate to her and her particular business. So the first person that pitched was Anitra Michelle of Plutocracy. So Anitra pitched Plutocracy, which is a fashion line. At its core, it's a fashion line. She mentioned how she started off as a pattern maker for Vera Wang, and she's worked with a bunch of other notable designers in the fashion community. And for her, the drive for this was she felt like women wanted designs where they had versatility, and she wanted to be one of the people to bring that to them. Now, she started this business some years back, and she got to a point where she felt like she needed to take a break. She was designing a bit of everything. She was designing full collections. So At a certain point, she decided she needed to regroup, sort of put the business on pause and take a break. So she did that. She moved to France for a little over a year, and there is where she discovered this redirection, and she decided to come back, start Plutocracy again, and give the direction a new life with these kimonos. So kimonos are her thing. That seems to be what the judges agreed should be her signature item. She had on a beautiful kimono. She had some kimonos there for display, but she also had some other pieces from previous collections. So naturally the judges wanted to know about that. They're like, what are these other pieces? She told them they're from other collections. They were then asking her about what was popular, what had done really well for her in the past, her first go around. And she said what it was. She said that it was a wool coat with silk lining. And they were just like, where's that? I want to see that. And if you know anything about wintertime, fall in New York, you know that as women, we love a good wool coat. We love a good warm coat. We love something fashionable, something we can regularly pull out the closet and just hit the streets and go. So the ladies, they wanted to see that, but she didn't have it there. And they were basically, their commentary was pretty much like, hey, you need that coat. Stick, when you're talking fashion, and it's because it's such a saturated market, there's so much that's vying for people's attention. When you find something that's a hit and that's popular, you need to make it a part of your staple items and you need to run with it. So they were encouraging her to make that piece something that is signature for her because it has done well in the past. It's proven itself. And Mickey asked her, she said, do you like making money? And she was referencing that popular wool silk coat. She's like, hey, if you like making money, you need to be in the business of servicing people with what they want instead of what you think they want or what you think they need. Give them what is proven that they want. Definitely agreed with that. And I think that for Anitra, her story, it hit home for me because she seemed like the type of person that was a creator. She wanted to continuously innovate and put new things out there and give things to the marketplace that she thought it deserved and that women would love. But one of the things that some of us realize in being creatives is that sometimes you have to focus. You have to focus on one thing. You have to do it really well. You have to make it your signature. You have to be known for it. And then you can branch out and do other things. And sometimes we get clouded because we just really want to do all of these things, but we need to take a step back and focus on the one thing that's really working, especially if you've seen something that's been proven to work for you. So that was one of the judges' biggest critiques with Anitra, is that, hey, they love the kimonos. They didn't love the price point of the kimonos because she said they were anywhere from $700 to $850. So they definitely questioned her about the high price point and why not get these to a lower price point so that they could be accessible for the everyday woman. And they did ask her about revenue. She said that she's just starting to make a profit, and she would use the $25,000 in seed money to make multiple collections as well as work on production. So one of their main concerns and questions for her was, you know, you've tried this before. You've given it a go before. How do we have the confidence in knowing that if you try this again, you won't end up in the same situation that you were in before, where you were basically losing money. You weren't making the kind of money that you wanted to be making. The business wasn't thriving, so you put it on pause and you took a break. How do we know that the same business mindset that you had before that resulted in that situation won't resurface and end up in the same situation with you basically, you know, almost like wasting the seed money? And that was a valid question. It's like, hey, what have you done between now and then to prove to yourself and to other people that, hey, I can really turn this into a viable business now? And when you're dealing with clothing and apparel, that's always tricky. That's one of those things you definitely have to have a game plan. So I like the feedback that they gave her. I like that they were not down on her. They were championing her and saying, we love the products that we see so far. We really are in love with this kimono. Own it, you know, make it the best that it can be. So that was Anitra, and let's just say Anitra and Plutocracy in her kimonos, okay? Because that was her signature item as far as we were all concerned. And second up was Safira Martin and her sass box. Safira Martin got sassy with us, honey. Oh, and actually, she did get a little sassy at one point in her presentation. They were being a little critical about her presentation, about her products and what the box entailed. And she said, maybe it's not for you. Why did she say that? They did not like that. And the first thing that I was thinking was, she looks like a baby. She looks significantly younger than everybody that was on that panel. And when she said, maybe it's not for you, I was thinking that what's going across their minds could very well be, oh, she's trying to call us old. How dare you? She never said that, and she quickly tried to backtrack and clean it up. So it worked out for her. Let me get into what her product was. Her product, the SaaS Box, is a subscription lifestyle box. It retails at $20 a month. And her whole underlying premise is for women's support, women's empowerment. And that's really what I got from it. I can't really say anything else. But a portion of the proceeds, she's planning to have them go to breast cancer because her mother is a breast cancer survivor. So that's something that's close to her. The box and the coloring, it's in line with the breast cancer colors. It's a pink box, a hot pink box, really cute box. I like the way that the box was designed, but this is where the problem comes in. A portion of the proceeds will go to breast cancer, right? Well, when she broke down her numbers, she doesn't have any proceeds, okay? She started this in January of 2016, so she's been doing it about, or probably more than a year. If we talk about our timing right now, we're in January 2017, and she said that she saw the need, right? But her box takes about $50 to $55 to create. Currently, she has about 10 subscribers, and I told you that the box costs $20 a month to the subby. That's a profit loss. It did not take the judges very long at all to call out, hey, you're losing money. And she said, yes, I am. But she explained how she was passionate about it and everything. So then they wanted to know, what's in this box? You have this box sitting here. What's in this box? We want to see. We want to know. She goes into the box. And I don't know if subconsciously, maybe she wasn't confident enough about what was in the box, because I was thinking, they shouldn't have had to ask what was in the box. She should have immediately used what was in the box as a selling point. Just like last week, the young lady that was selling tea, she automatically offered a sample of the tea. So I thought that, you know, what is in this box? Because the fact that she didn't automatically offer up to say, hey, take a look in this box is awesome, it raised an eyebrow. So then she gets into what is actually in the box. In the box, there was a nice welcome letter. There was a coffee mug of sorts. I don't really want to call it a coffee mug. It was like maybe like a, let's just say a drink dispenser of sorts. It's something you've seen before. You can probably put hot and cold stuff in it. It was hot pink to match the color of the box. And it had like maybe some gold lettering on it. So it was cute, but it wasn't something that you haven't seen before. You might not be able to go to like Bed Bath & Beyond and get you something similar, or maybe like a specialty store online, order you one custom or whatever. Then there was a candle, and she named the candle distributor. I guess it's probably someone that's a small business just like her, which is great. Then there were two lip colors, and I think that was it. Of course, leave it to Lauren, good old Lauren. She always comes through with the good questions. She said, why do I need this? It looks like just another box full of stuff. Now, although sometimes the truth hurts, that was the same thing that I was thinking. What is the real selling point for this box? Now, Mickey, she pointed out some good things, but she also, when I'm sure Safira watches this episode back, she'll see that Mickey was really rooting for her, because Mickey really loved the box. She loved the idea of the box. One of the first things that she said sort of under her breath was, she needs a salesperson. So in other words, she needs someone to be able to sell this box to her and probably to, for her, sell the box for her and probably to chime in and say, hey, if you did this, or if you executed in this way, we could make this box 10 times better. We could really sell this box. So Mickey was an advocate for her, but she did tell her, you're not engaging your potential customer. You're not giving them a concrete reason to say, I need this box. I can't live without this box. And that's what they wanted to feel like after she showed them the items in the box. Out of the three contestants, the two that moved on to the semifinal round were Barika Edwards with the Veterans Program and Anitra Michelle with Plutocracy and her kimonos. So their challenge, next up their challenge was to go to a sort of look like an outdoor flea market, and they were given 25 minutes to spend $25 and make a profit. It seemed to me that the judges were looking to test them on a few different things with this challenge: follow through and the ability to stay on task, as well as the ability to be able to identify value in items, products, potentially services, and everything else. They wanted to see, can you identify and see the value in things? Because you have $25 and we want you to be able to basically make a profit. Now, I didn't understand initially, but what ended up happening in the end was the items that they bargained and haggled for at this flea market of sorts, they were then supposed to bring that item back to the studio, and then that item was going to be appraised to see how much that item was worth. So Barika ended up purchasing a southern antique looking type of grandmother feeling doll. This man ended up telling her that it was a voodoo doll, not the man that she purchased it from, but a man that she was trying to get to purchase it from her to barter with. So he ended up telling her it was a voodoo doll, and I was like, oop, I don't know how far this is going to go now for her, which she seemed surprised, like she didn't know, hadn't even thought that it could have been a voodoo doll, but she paid $15 for it, and the judges related her strategy. When they were assessing things, they related her strategy back to her business and questioned her strategy in business, because they wanted to know, was she too consumed with telling the story of this doll versus getting the monetary value out of this situation? But she ended up making a decent profit off of her doll, because her doll was valued at significantly more than what she paid for the doll. Then Anitra purchased a gold record, which is the one thing that we saw her purchase. Then this gold type of chalice thing, like a cup of sorts. And we saw her purchase those two things. The judges said that she purchased three things in total. And they wondered what was her strategy. They were asking her, does she have a challenge or an inability to focus on one great thing and take it all the way? And they obviously related that back to her business and questioned her about that. She ended up making the lesser amount of profit. The item that she put in for assessment or for valuation was the cup or the chalice, and that ended up only garnering her $5 in profit. So she didn't win the challenge. But whether you win the challenge or not doesn't determine whether you go home or not. So out of these two women, only one woman could advance and still stay in the competition. And the woman that stayed in the competition and advanced was Anitra. It was Anitra and Plutocracy. The judges, I think that they chose her because they really liked the quality in her product. They saw vision for it. I'm sure someone like Mickey recognized that this kimono could be in an Essence magazine. It could probably be in a lot of the different fashion magazines. So I think that they saw the potential in it. And when you can connect with something in the sense that it's something that I would use, it's something that I would wear, I think that makes you see the vision for the product, the service, the brand a bit more. In the end, Anitra advanced to the next round, and I'm, like I said before, I'm very curious to see how this all plays out with the women advancing to the next round. What is that going to look like? But for now, we can just see who the winners are, cheer them on, check them out on social media and stuff, and just see how they're developing, especially after this show. What opportunities are they getting? What are they doing with the opportunity of having these eyeballs, these extra eyeballs in their business that they didn't have before? Because I think that that's something to be said. Whether you make it onto the next round or not, as a businesswoman, do the most that you can with leveraging the opportunity of having been on a cable television show, you know? That does it for the Queen Boss Recap. If you're not already following Switch, Pivot, or Quit on Instagram, where we provide a regular dose of feel-good encouragement and inspiration, mainly on IG stories, so be sure to check that out. You might want to get down with us over at Switch, Pivot, or Quit on IG. And if you're already following and you're thinking, I don't regularly see posts from Switch, Pivot, or Quit, you know what you might want to do? I got a good insider tip. Turn on your post notifications. That means every time we post a new feel-good post, you will be notified and you will be the first to know. So that is my solution to all the Instagram algorithm problems. And also, don't forget to head over to www.switchpivotorquit.com to keep up with all the goodies that we provide over there as well. As always, keep killing it.